Project Sapien is a podcast meant to engage our brothers and sisters in the law enforcement military communities in conversations we all know we need to have. All opinions you hear are our own and are protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. They in no way reflect or are meant to reflect the opinion of any specific agency, officer, or service member. Some opinions may be controversial. Listener discretion is advised.
Project Sapient. I just wanted that to play a little bit longer because that was a cool tune.
I like that one. Nice pull. I'm an excellent opener. You're getting good at this, man.
Oh, yeah. You know, practice takes a lot.
It does take a lot. And we are putting a lot on the table this year as the number one law enforcement and military podcast back, thanks to our tens of thousands of listeners. Back for season three, and we got a big, big guest today, but we would not be here without all the support of our partners and our sponsors, starting with AAA Police Supply. Our law enforcement listeners, if you're looking for one-stop shop for duties, supplies, and gear, you need to look no further. Head over to AAAPoliceSupply.com and use the code HYBRID10 for 10% off every single order you make. We also want to thank our friends at the Havoc Journal, the voice of veteran affairs and the veteran community, focusing on current affairs and articles of interest to the public in general and veteran community specifically, for independent news that gets you to the facts on everything from geopolitics, science and tech, finance to contemporary affairs and, yes, entertainment. We have a really good time over there. Head over to HavocJournal.com as well as our good friends there with the partners and friends at the Profiles in Havoc podcast. We also want to thank the Second Mission Foundation, educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community, helping them find their second mission after government service. Heading to secondmissionfoundation.org for more detailed info will serve you well. We want to thank all of our friends at 22 Mohawks that are about to throw Iman out of a plane in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to veterans needing help navigating the reentry into the civilian world when they return home from duty. To learn more about what 22 Mohawks is doing, head to 22mohawks.com. For more info, we also want to thank our good buddy Kyle Lamb and his company, Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear anywhere from battle belts to slings and everything in between. Kyle Lamb's company offers the elite selection of high quality, battle proven tactical gear guaranteed to be ready when you need it every single time the job calls for it. Check them out at VikingTactics.com. We also want to thank our good friends and supporters and really the community that just keeps growing over at the Overwatch Project. We all know that suicide is often an impulsive decision, sometimes taking less than 10 minutes to get to that critical point, and firearms are the most lethal tool there is. The Overwatch Project's aim is to put some time and distance between our person in crisis and that tool by just fucking asking the question, do you have a plan for your firearms when you're in that dark place? Can we make one together? And will you be my buddy and help me with the same? Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Ugh, Iman, man. Tell you what, every time I make that last read with Overwatch, I get fired up. I want to talk to people, and we got a lot coming with that. And you know, having you and our group and everybody supporting them and them with the support of the community, we just have such a great group of partners and sponsors and supporters for this season. It's kind of overwhelming sometimes. You just look at the names and the list and the people that are coming together collaboratively, and it just makes me feel good, man. It makes me feel good like things are trending in a positive direction, and we've got so many supporters coming together to help each other in the community. It's awesome. I really look forward to making the sponsor reads at the beginning, because it just reminds me how many awesome people are out there doing awesome things in the world.
Oh, that's the thing, Jake. I mean, you know, the best quote I've ever had is to a friend, JD, which you know who JD is. And the best thing that he says, when you collaborate with other people, it's not about, you know, one person taking the whole cake. It's about everybody getting a slice of that cake and everybody contributing to the cake as a whole. So that's exactly what these partners and friends and supporters are just. Every one of us has a slice of it, and all coming together, we create that entire community where we throw people out of planes, or we,
exactly,
you know, or we take them on hunting trips or whatever it might be. You know, we somehow find a way. And as the great Marcus Aurelius always said, if there are obstacles in the way, that is the way. So So that's the way, that's pretty much our mentality on that. And Chuck, last week's episode with Chuck was, I mean, the feedback has been
extraordinary.
Just looking at our LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, just everybody was so stoked to have him on and just to tell his story. And, you know, what is he, 31 now, 31 surgeries now?
31, yep.
With all the combat-related injuries and all that. I mean, talk about the epitome of resilience, you know, just pushing forward and keeping on going.
Well, no question about that. And this isn't even a joke. The progression of our guests have been on purpose driven, right? And we talked a lot with Chuck about how to get, you know, and Mike Malpass first week, how to get mentally prepared, where to get yourself in your headspace, because you can't do anything unless your head's in the right space first. And then Chuck, the embodiment of physical preparedness, right? And we knew coming out of that interview there were going to be a million questions from people. Okay, great, awesome. You say to train hard, you say to do this, you say to do that. How the fuck do I go do this? Like, what do you, I mean, do I just go watch Commando on repeat and, you know, the trap scene and Predator on repeat and just go get jacked and right? I mean, it worked for us, but that's not really the smartest way to do it. So no, but in all reality, for everybody listening, we actually had a plan for this. And this whole conversation, this entry, the first three episodes cap with my good buddy, Corey Gilday, 24-year strength and conditioning specialist from everything from college to professionals. He's the new director of tactical athletic performance and also the sports med side of the house with Triple Canopy, an American private security company and private military company over in Baghdad right now. So Corey's coming to us live from Baghdad, where I think it's like 7 o'clock at night. He's been working for a while over there, but Triple Canopy is, for those that are, I don't know, maybe not old enough or they were born after 9/11. They don't remember any of this. Triple Canopy is the culmination and they acquired Academy and then Blackwater. And now they're the Constellis Group, and Triple Canopy is the big overarching company name for this massive, massive company that provides security services all across the world. And especially at places like our embassies where we have diplomats and representatives. And Corey is the man training all of their, and I'm using air quotes here, but it's starting to become real, tactical athletes. Corey Gilday, welcome, man.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on. So gets me doing something other than coaching all day.
Right. So. Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because you're the verbiage and the transfer of the space, you know, cause you and I, you know, we've kind of spread the gamut with training from athletes to first responders to military, all, you know, and everything within military from basic all the way up to SF. And you and I have talked about professional athletes in the first responder and military space for years, treating them like professional athletes, right? Because their job is 100% dependent on their body's output, just like any basketball player or football player. But we were always made fun of for that initially. And now it's like, oh no, this is real. These guys need and gals need to train like pro athletes, and you're doing it, man. You're doing it on the ground in Baghdad.
Yeah, it's definitely a shift too. You get a lot of guys that are on ground here that don't actually have the athletic background that some other athletes do. They came straight out of high school or maybe they went to college but never played sports, and they don't have that athletic experience, knowledge, even how to take care of themselves. So all they've done is spent 15, you know, anywhere from 10, 15, 20 years in the military, and then they come to me. And they have no solutions for how to prolong their athletic experience. Because that was my first meeting with the guys was, you guys are not just gunfighters. You guys are, you're athletes with a gun. And I'm going to treat you like that. And especially because I tell the guys that you need to treat us like you're a professional athlete. You're making six figures plus, because all these guys, even the lowest paid gunfighter makes more than six figures. And so you need to take care of yourself, your body, because if your body fails and you got to go home, there's no like, you know, no downtime. You got to go home, you'll get paid. So
that's quite the motivation, to say the least. Is, yeah, if you can't perform your task and your duty, you don't get a paycheck, you don't feed your family. I got to think that's another level of stress for those guys, that having you on board now to know that they can extend that career is
right,
pretty remarkable.
Well, the main reason why I'm here is all private companies that work with the U.S. military abroad overseas has the Defense Base Act insurance policy. It's the long, it's the extension of the Longshoreman Act from World War II. If they get hurt here on mission or in the gym, they do get a a policy where they get to take care of themselves until they're healed. But most of the time, it doesn't equate to what they make when they're working. And it does shut off once they get cleared for duty, then they get shut off. And then they're 2-3 months again before getting back here, and they have to kind of go through the whole rigmarole. So, you know, I was brought on to help build resiliency and performance in these guys, and hopefully reducing the DBA instances where guys have to go home and go on, you know, part-time disability, which I've only been here a month, and I already have a 30% reduction first month. So I'm happy with that. I'm hoping to have a bigger impact as I go on. So.
Wow. 30. Wow. That's
incredible.
That is pretty good. Wow. I'm just thinking, you know, the whole phrase tactical athlete, right? You need to train like you're an athlete. There was actually I did the certification for science, advanced analyst. And essentially the physiologist at Poor Science put out an article talking about how first responders need to train like they're athletes. Like literally they put out an entire study about the who, what, when, where, why. So it's very interesting to me that, you know, you and Jake, which I always say I hate Jake because every time I work out, he smokes the shit out of me. And which, you know, I'm sort of sadistic. I like it. But at the same time, I always yell at Jake for ruining my day with a good workout.
You know, for most people, 10 sit-ups isn't hard, but I'm in, you know, it can get to be challenging.
Listen, the pizza's got to go somewhere. All right.
So
you can squat with me.
Oh, I'm in. That's a trap. That is a trap.
Oh, and I can tell a trap when I hear it. Just like when you challenged me yesterday. Hey, do 2K on the rower and let me know how you do. Like, oh my
God, break in that new rower. It's okay for time. No big deal. Corey, so you're launching this program. You're truly standing this up from the ground. Walk us through how that has gone from kind of inception of, you know, cocktail napkin sketch out to where you are now, where, you know, like you just said, 30% reduction already in injuries.
So I knew, when it was presented to me and I went through the process of getting hired. By the way, it takes about 6-8 months to get hired, to actually get on ground and to get clearances and whatnot. So I was still working at the university, and this was kind of in the back. I didn't know if it was going to happen or not, because I get offers from other universities, and I had expressed my interest. So they had put through this, and I didn't really put a lot of thought process into it till actually I gave my notice to the University of Texas A&M International, where I was before. And then I realized, you know, I go to a university and they've, as a strength coach, they already had a program. They already have policies and procedures or a framework of what to do, of how we interact, how we intake athletes, how we work with other parts of the staff. You know, the staff knows how you interact with a strength coach. Well, I come here and the position had never existed before. No one had any idea. The vice president pretty much of the company pretty much created the position and the program, but didn't flesh it out. It's like, hey, I'm hiring you, build it. And literally build it. Like, as in, I wrote a 60-page handbook of policies and procedures last week.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I haven't read anything more than 10 pages since I got out of grad school. And now I have a 60-page, you know, section one, here's how we intake an athlete. Here's the policy procedures. Here's how we're going to do this. I had to flesh out what it's going to look like long-term, where we're going to have performance specialists underneath me for each unit. We have we've got essentially five unit support unit USCs here that oversee different groups and teams, and we're going to assign a performance specialist. That's the goal. We'll see how as a program grows towards that. But I've had to write policy procedures like that. Then realizing, you know, and when I was hired, I had no idea what the gym looked like, because you can't take pictures. You can't
share secure with facilities.
So, yeah, so I have two facilities I oversee that I can train people out of. They're essentially like a global gym setup. Like they both have a Life Fitness package of equipment and some plate loaded and dumbbells and barbells. You can do everything you want, but it's definitely not a collegiate setup. And I think the vice president initially thought, oh, I'll just train groups, and it's not even
right,
set
like
up
like circuit training type.
Like, yeah, like do call it like how the Thor program works or how H2F works, what, you know, right. this, this team is going to show up, this, you know, this low pro team is going to show up before their shift and they're going to do a workout. No, it doesn't work that way because everyone's got different schedules. And also because I am working for a company, not a university now, they don't have to work out. All they have to do is pass their PRT. So this is all the big thing. This is all optional. To work with me is optional. You're not required to work with me. So that's another challenge too. Like, you know, Army Marine Corps, you have to go do PT. Mm-hmm. These guys can do what they want to do. So not only am I building this program, I'm trying to create buy-in too. So I realized I had to do that. And I realized with my sports medicine background that I get greater buy-in by making them feel better, not making them work out hard, but trying to show them I care about them. So we're building a rehab recovery room with cold plunge, Normatec sleeves, game ready ice packs, body tempering system, because I'm a licensed nice. Body temperer, scraping, and massage guns. And we'll have an area for them so they can recover. They never had it before, because before they would get, if someone got hurt, sprained ankle, for example, sprain, can you walk on it? Okay, you can go. If you can't, you go home. I mean, there was no transition from
right
to injured to duty. Like you got to suck it up and deal with it. And, you know, invariably that led to longer term issues, disabilities and injuries that became worse. So
I got to think that would be some cost savings in there as well, because sending somebody home and cycling somebody back in, that's got to be a lot more expensive than having on hand, on staff rehab specialists and recovery centers to where they can stay. And then, you know, maybe they're down for a few days, but they're not having to cycle out and then cycle somebody new back in.
Well, typically when someone gets hurt, has to go on DBA, you know, some people go on DBA for 3 months and some people go on DBA permanent. So the average cost of a DBA claim is about $300,000 per the company.
Wow.
So if you figured in the December 12th to January 12th period, I was there, so it's 28%. I saved three less people that normally go in. And now we're trending almost. Last January, we had something like 30 guys go home. And right now, I think we have had three. Wow. And we're almost, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, I'm just thinking, again, back, this is military thought process, is the old, here, drink water, drive on, here's some ibuprofen and keep going. And
change your socks.
Yeah, change your socks.
Change your socks.
Exactly. I mean, that was always my thing whenever I went into TMC, it's not like I constantly went, but when I hurt my knee and, you know, I had a slight tear in the meniscus, they gave me two choices, either I go home or I suck it up, but without any sort of like rehab in place, you know, to help strengthen my knees or anything like that. It was just like, sure, all right, drink water, drive on, and that's it. And take care of it when you get home. So that's real interesting in terms of, you know, in your neck of the woods now, where you are doing more. I mean, do you find yourself doing more rehab than actual, like, you know, given the workouts to the
like, you know, so I ordered some of my equipment before I even left. So like right now I have some of my analytics stuff. So they paid for Vald force plates and Vald force frames. So the sports science technology. So I can do assessments, but like all my recovery tools are on a pallet coming over here. It takes a while for stuff to get over here. So I'm using pretty much my hands and modalities that I have, you know, I'm great. I have my own scraper, my own massage gun. So I'm using my own tools. I'm trying to jerry-rig sports medicine modalities so that we can get guys better, you know, deal with ankles, building mobility, work on activation. Yeah, I'm doing lots of quick fixes on people for right now. And that's mainly because I feel that I'll build trust when they realize I can make them not hurt. Or maybe I can, you know, then we can start going from there. So, you know, and
the injury mechanisms over there too are pretty similar to what we experience on, you know, this side of the planet. You know, probably, I mean, I'm guessing here because we haven't talked about it, ankles, knees, hips, shoulders, neck and back.
You know, we get a lot of kind of the standards. A lot of AC, glenohumeral joint, shoulder injuries because of wearing plates. People are throwing their back out because they're wearing plates in the car all day long and sitting in the car and with plates on.
Right.
You know, so, and the other thing we got to remember is, and this is something what other tactical strength coaches don't have to deal with. You're training the H2F or POTF guys are working with a guy average age of 26 years old. My average age is 43. So take the 20 years of service, all the wear and tear, and then I get them. So I don't even get a young regenerative athlete. I get a guy that's already been beat up on well, and he just wants to make it through the next 10, 11 years of working so he can retire. So
the flip side of that, though, is that hopefully some of those guys, because they've gotten smacked in the face with an injury here or there, are a little bit more muted with their response to just pushing harder through it and will actually listen to what you're saying. I would
they hope. Are the older ones are, the younger ones tend to like, I know what I'm doing, I can just get through it. And you know, because I think they're still so fresh from the military experience of suck it up, buttercup, don't rock the boat.
Military. That you find that a lot of young, I mean, now that, you know, I'm basically in that age group, like, you know, I'm 42 years old and I just had shoulder surgery from a very old injury from the Army that actually turned out that my shoulder had a break in it that was never properly healed. Because overseas, when I was in Iraq, I heard it and they just gave me a couple range of motion exercises like, oh, yeah, you're good. You know, here's some ibuprofen. Turns out there was actually an actual fracture in my shoulder that now I finally got it taken care of. But now I'm not pushing like the way I would normally do. And Jay keeps reminding me every single day. He's like, hey, if you feel pain, just stop. And sometimes my old 20-year-old self says, oh, you know, screw it, I'm going to push right through it. But with age and experience comes what, you know, you're a little smarter. So I don't push myself as hard and I make sure I'm having correctly. That way I know in the long run, I can get myself back to that peak performance I was in, you know, because of the shoulder surgery. So that's interesting that you're still with the younger crowd. They still have that mentality, which, you know, when you're in that mentality, I get it, how hard it can be to try to get them to take care of themselves better.
Well, you know, one of the biggest thing I had to overcome too is because this program wasn't rolled out, like, I don't think the vice president realized how much explaining. He kind of said, hey, you're getting a strength coach, a sports medicine guy coming in. And that's pretty much all they were told. And they pretty much said, let him do his thing. And somehow it got the messages and got confused. And all of a sudden they thought that I was here to. They had put some rules in on exercises before I got here because they were having so many injuries. They're like, you can't do this. You can't lift more than 150% of your body weight in the big lefts. You can't box jump. You can't do jujitsu. You can't do Krav Maga because they were so afraid of they were getting these injuries. And they were just, it was kind of like they're playing whack-a-mole. And I think the guys were really feeling beaten down because there's not a lot to do here besides work out and go to your room. Because this is a dry contract. There is alcohol on here, but so you can't drink, you can't fraternize. So it's pretty much work out, go to work, and earn money. So when you start narrowing their world, it was disheartening. So they thought that I was going to call me the fitness snitch the first 2 days here because they thought I was going to go around and check people's like, oh, you're lifting too much weight, you're doing that. And I said, I don't care. I actually want you to lift big weights. I just want you to make sure the programming is correct and the efficacy makes sense. So we're doing stuff. And, you know, what I realized, their assumption that guys were being stupid in the gym, it wasn't that. It's the guys that decide that they don't want to work out. And then all of a sudden they've got 4 weeks before their PRT and then they started jam, you know, like Jake, I said, this, try to jam 10 pounds of shit in an 8 pound sack.
Yeah.
And they can't handle the volume. And then we're seeing injuries there either in the gym, a strained calf or your shoulder, because you're trying to do all the stuff to get ready when you should have just been in shape. And the PRT standards here are not hard. You know, they're not hard.
So
it's a mile and a half run, push-ups and sit-ups. So
yeah, so there isn't even a lifting component in that test. But the flip side is you got to lift to get, you know, for job function. If you're not resistance training, it's not going to be a good day when you need to have that horsepower there and it's not there.
That's a lot of these guys have never taken fire. You know, we're getting, you know, the older guys are OIF and OEF guys, but this newer group. Even their combat deployment, they never fired around in anger, nor have they experienced the adrenaline shock of when you get shot at by someone who wants to fucking kill you. And I tell these, some of these guys that don't want to work out until it's PRT time. And I go, so you're going to go on mission. You're not in shape for PRT, which is bare minimum standard. It's 65% in the zone. So it's, I mean, like you guys are all in your 40s and I'm 46. So like for me, my mile and a half time would be 14 minutes, 14:01. I would have to do 42 pushups and 51 crunches. That's like a warm up to me.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you could speed walk and then,
But there's guys who can't pass that, and then they go, and then well, I don't need to do that. I'm like, I just sit in the truck. I'm like, okay, true. 99.9% time, you're probably gonna hop out, walk over to a venue, make sure a stadie's okay, go back car and drive back. But you need to be strong because eventually that just doing that's going to break you down. But what happens, let's reference something for the past. What happens if something like Raven 3-3-1 happens and then you're in an ambush and you're running across boulevards at full speed taking fire with 30 pounds of gear on yourself multiple times? Your heart is going to fucking, I literally told you, your heart's going to fucking explode.
Yeah,
you're not gonna.
You know what I find? So in my neck of the woods and in the law enforcement world, law enforcement community, with what I see is the more veteran combat vets who seen combat have a different mentality than those who were either never in the military or were in the military did not see combat when it comes to PT standards. And it seems that those that had the experience understand how important it is to be in shape, right? Versus the guys who've never had, like you said, a round go by their head and that pucker factor, say, oh shit, this dude's trying to kill me, and your heart rate skyrockets to 200 beats per minute and you're expected to perform at that level. And that's the fight that I always have over here within the law enforcement community of, you need to train like it's your last day on earth. Like, you know, you're training for that final fight. And that's kind of like a motto I've always held. I think Tim Kennedy first came up with that. You know, you got to train like it's your final fight. And it seems that even now with law enforcement, the standards are being lowered and lowered and lowered because people can't pass the mile and a half. People can't do this, can't do that. And that is, to me, a huge setup for failure, you know, eventually to the officer or to the people you're sworn to protect. So it's kind of refreshing to see that, you know, overseas that you're bringing that back. Like, hey, no, these are the standards, but you need to think about exceeding those standards if you're not meeting them. So that, I mean, I like that a lot.
You know, and the thing is, these guys think I'm a company guy because I don't work for the task order. I work directly for Triple Canopy, which means technically none of my bosses are here on ground. They're all back in Virginia and Herndon. So I have my own chain of command, and they initially thought I was a corporate guy, but I was like, no, I'm here for you guys. So like, I'll even go to the State Department. Being a fitness expert on the campus here, I get asked for my services a lot. So like, I work with the AMBO. I work with her once a week. And I tell her, I've told her the senior RSOs, and I've told them, my thoughts on some policies that need to be changed in order to help overall resiliency. And, you know, they understand there's certain rules the government has when it comes to staffing and whatnot. And I go, that may be the spirit of the rule, but like in actuality, you're asking, like, you know, they ask for 100% staffing. I don't know in what world the 100% staffing is actually feasible, but I mean, doesn't happen in the military. It doesn't happen in corporate America. I'm not sure why we're going to do it here. So,
and you mentioned that a couple times, and this tends to happen with, I'm not going to say I don't want to be in a derogatory fashion, uneducated people, but there are a lot of people that unfortunately think they know what it takes to be fit and strong because maybe they were a high school athlete or maybe even a college athlete, right? But their training standards are shit. they were successful with their athleticism in spite of what they were doing, not because of what they were doing.
Right.
They transfer that down the line to the next person they, you know, advise or give coaching to, or God forbid, set policy based on. So things like that, 1.5 time body weight max. I mean, are you, not to be a, you know, but I look at that person and be like, are you fucking kidding me? My 13-year-old can do that. She can do 2
well,
X deadlift, right?
That's
it's like,
thing.
What the fuck are you talking about? That doesn't, the number has nothing to do with the function of the movement. That to me just screams that this is a, you know, you got a lot of educating to do on the ground level, because they're just, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about when they say those numbers.
Well, what happens is, I'm talking to some of the bigger lifters. I've seen a 500, 600 pounds, 700 pound squat in here, but those guys are not the ones getting hurt. It's the ones that don't know how to lift. I went through all the, we have these called Froys that are first corrective injuries, and I'm seeing, I hurt my back picking up 135 pound deadlift.
Right.
Or they're picking weights up for the first time. They're not learning how to brace. If you're pulling 600, 700 pounds, you know how to brace.
Yep.
You know how to brace. You got the strength. And our physician, he's the one who created it. But I understand why he created it. He created it because he is not on ground. He's a consultant 7,000 miles away. So they were trying to create this program via policy to try to create bumpers. And I told them, you know, essentially what you guys are doing is you're kicking the can down the road toward mission injuries. So maybe they don't get hurt in the gym, but now they're getting hurt on mission. So,
yeah. So, real quick, just Corey, just, I mean, you're right, 100%. The guys who lift very heavy weight, they know what they're doing, you know, the 600, 700 pound lifters. And what the young guys don't see, or those that don't see, is what it took for that athlete to get to that 700 pound, where
right,
the first time he was only doing barbell. That's the way I learned, right? I mean, I had to, my coach at the time was Chris Duffin and Kabuki Strength guys. So they get rid of all the weight and we're just going to work only form, only bracing, only rooting, just so you learn those things before we even start adding weight. So when, yeah, I mean, I see 100% what you mean by those who, you know, certain injuries that happen because guys who have never lifted go right into 135 and they end up tweaking their back as a result.
Yeah. By the way, Chris is one of my friends.
Yeah. We have a very small circle connection. I'm in as awkwardly related to the Duffin clan out there in Kabuki, which we can talk about offline. But it's hilarious. He has ties that apparently we all go even further back than we thought, because Iman's been around. Corey, let me ask you this, since we're kind of on this topic, and for those who are listening, going to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here with training protocols and stuff. So if you're glassy eyed, you don't want to actually learn anything, you can go ahead and skip forward. But if you actually want to learn something, pay the fuck attention, because Corey's the smartest man, not just in this room, but most of the rooms. You got your average demographic coming to you, right? Experienced, few trips around the sun, more likely in their mid 30s or, you know, early 40s, trying to be as functional of an operating contractor in the field, healthy, strong. Let's take the middle of the road, the bell curve guy or gal. What does a week with them, with you, look like? What do you have them doing? Not active recovery injury stuff. That stuff's pretty cute and easy, but just a general kind of training pattern, not just for sustainability over there, but also for progression to enhance themselves.
So I can kind of go through some of the protocols that I'm installing now. And so the first thing we do, a functional movement screen. I know it's somewhat maligned, but the company wanted to use it. The medical officer wanted to use it, and it's something the military uses too. So there's some standardization, and we're also going to use it for when guys go back to states and rotate home or before deployments. We're going to use it as an assessment tool for us, for help to assess who we're hiring too. It's more of a standardization. So we FMS it, then we use the Vault technology. We do a set of series on the force decks. We'll go quiet posture, single leg balance. We'll do counter movement jump versus no movement counter movement jump. We'll do a iso mid thigh pull for power development and disbursement. We'll do a plyo push up on the deck. Then we'll go to the force frames and we'll look at adduction, hip adduction, abduction, looking for differences in adduction, abduction strength and right to left. We'll do rotator cuff and then we'll do neck strength. So we'll take all that data input into developing programming for our contractors, and then go through, and we have Team Builder here as well. So they have Team Builder. So we'll sit down and I have, I'll develop them a mobility package based off of some of the issues I may have seen in their functional movement screen. I'll give them some correctives to start looking at some of the imbalances I saw on the vault screen, and then we'll start setting them up. A lot of the guys, I'm doing lots of programming right now, so I'll take them through their first week of programming on, like, how are we squatting? How are we hinging? A lot of these guys have no Olympic lifting background, and so that means I don't program it. I'm not sure. There's no need to. Like Joe DeFranco said, there's other ways to develop power development, and I'm going to be wasting time, and I'm probably going to be irritating wrists and shoulders for no reason, especially because they don't need a tremendous amount of explosive power. Right. They just, so we'll do other modalities to create power. So really we're focusing on primal movement, squatting, hinging, push, pulling, how are we bracing correctly? And I'm trying, as I coach them through the individual sessions, and I do some groups right now, like I try to throw as much science at them as possible. Like, here's why I'm doing this. I'm doing the vertical push pull with the knee dominant because it moves with patterning. It goes, I'm still getting question. Is it leg day today? No, it's not
leg day every day.
Yeah. He goes, and then they've noticed that. It's like, oh, so I did legs yesterday. No, you did your anterior position of your quad. Now we're doing hamstrings and some calves combined with this pattern. So that's why I don't take you to failure on some of the stuff. And he goes, and then we all transfer that way. But everything is so unique because, you know, there are a total of 400 PSSs, which are protective security specialists, our gunfighters. So, you know, a typical Division I head strength coach may have to oversee 250, but that's even with a staff and the team environment. Maybe. I got 400 that really are mainly individually, you know, so.
Yeah, that's a heavy load.
Wow. It's tremendous.
it's a lot, you know. And one of the things too, and I catch this a little bit as you're describing. Well, actually, let me back up. We've been talking about the force plate. For the people that don't know, because they're not, you know, tech nerds like us, can you explain how and what the force plate is and how that's utilized for data collection?
So the vault force plate looks like two stepping stones that we can put in a squat rack. We can put them out. It can collect data. If you just put your foot on it, it'll show you where your balance points are. If you're shifting, you're losing balance, where that ends up. And then we start transitioning to active stuff from jumping. It's got equations on it to figure out how much force is being put into the pad, you know, equate to a jump height for you. So it can track our jump heights fairly accurately. And then same thing with power disbursement. So we're using that because the cool thing is Vault gave us about 10 years of normative data for tactical athletes over the age of 30. So now I already have zones. I know where someone needs to be at. What are median range above average and at the average zone? So I can tell guys, hey, here's where you're at. So some of the bilateral stuff where there's no deficiencies being seen, but it's like, hey, you had, you know, 115 mets of energy coming through there. The standard is probably one, but more like 160. So we got to figure out why you're leaking energy.
Yeah.
So, and you know, with 400 people being individualized, I try not to get too far down rabbit holes. I almost use it as a way of, we'll keep readjusting and look at how my program and try to program. So there are vast swaths on similar programs so I can see what's working and what's not working. So,
Getting those 80% or 90% fixes right out of the gate helps a ton. You know, I know on the force plate, I've used them a bunch where we've had them. It's great because some people have a hard time. They don't have any proprioception, right? They don't have any sense of, am I driving through my heels on my deadlift? Well, what do you mean? Well, okay, you don't know what I'm talking about. Or you're diving over your toes on your squat. You know, where's your force going down through your foot is going to tell me a lot about where you're utilizing your musculature properly or improperly.
Right.
Up channel. And that plate gives a huge, huge haptic feedback with a visual representation for the athlete of yeah, this they, is what I'm doing.
What's going on? Oh, that's what you mean. I'm right there.
Yeah, and that's a huge fix, right? Because one of the things, especially, and I'm going to go out on a limb. I have just full transparency, no idea about your data. Most people are probably posterior deficient. Anterior is overdeveloped. So when they're doing things like deadlifts, they're probably driving through the balls of their feet. You know, they're pushing forward, their squats, their knees are diving out, and the whole knees over toes guy, that's a whole other fucking conversation. But the thing that is usually when you have that kind of volume of people to deal with, you know, it's like you need to find that 80-90% fix to help them, because you got to move on to the next person because you got 399 to go. I got to think that though that piece of tech and that piece of kit helps you help them, because they can just go right back to, oh, now I know where I need to push this foot, or now I need to know where I push and flex this muscle to keep in proper tracking.
Right. Because we're getting immediate feedback. I love the system too. I've worked with Hawken and Vald and other. Vald's tech is, I can literally do 6 tests on the force deck in a span of 5-6 minutes. On one athlete, just boom, 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 just switch. I could get them through so quickly, and then go right into the force frame and get all that stuff. I'm in love with the force frame, because the force frame is, because I can go, I can get the antagonistic motion done right away, and I can see the differences, and it's giving me all the feedback right away. I'm able to go see what the person's body is doing. So
let me ask you this, Corey. So I know a little bit about the force plate and stuff like that, but kind of what I'm hearing, can it be used, let's say, let's say at the range, right? You want to diagnose how somebody stands, how they're moving, whatever. Is that applicable for that environment?
Here's the problem with it, because it is Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. You just need to have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth out there. But if you were doing a static stance with firearms and doing like a draw, and see, we could definitely see the weight transfer of the foot right away. We'd be able to see, hey, you're shifting here. That's what happened. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, just diagnostic, work just to see what it looks like, presentation, draw, your stance, where the weight of your foot is, where does it shift, stuff like that. I'd be interested to see something like that just to help diagnose firearm instructors and stuff like that to see what's going on, but also just listening to your programming and how you're going about it, kind of the way Jake does with mine. It seems that both of you tend, since you work more towards for the military and service members and law enforcement, it seems that explosive power, right, where I'm sitting in a patrol car and I got to get out and all of a sudden be in a foot chase, it's kind of like the hinge and the movements that you guys train on is for that, like to be explosive right away when you need it.
The thing is, as the tactical athlete is, because I used to equate to baseball. So you get baseball. Sorry, I just got a notification about something. The baseball players, an outfielder will stay in the outfield and they will sit there a couple innings and not really move anything. And all of a sudden, then they got to explode. Same when we're dealing with a tactical athlete. You're sitting in the truck, you're not going anywhere. All of a sudden, now you get explode right away. So tissue quality, super important. That's why, I try to teach these guys, let's do lots of, let's do crawls and rolling and getting the tissue to be able to be extensible. I will go through hypermobility range of motions on certain exercises. Like we'll lunge and we'll overreach just to teach the tissue to get a little bit of load. We're not going to do excessive loads, but I want exchange of range of motion because, we're not Joel Seedman. We're like, oh, we're going to stay in the 90-degree zone. Like, life happens outside of those zones. So you need to be strong in a multitude of range of motions and different planes of motion too. So I try to teach the athletes, are you able to pop out and move and run? Not like, okay, I got to get up, I'm going to get set, and just be strong. Power is super important. Even as we get older, when I used to work in health clubs when I was really, really young, tell the elderly, like, hey, power development is important for you too, because fall is the number one reason why people end up in nursing homes. But if you have the power development to throw your foot out there and catch yourself on the put your hand out, you have that power, you're not going to get hurt. So,
you know, and it's funny, we talk around range of motion a lot, and in our minds, and I've noticed, and you know this too, you know, we think range of motion, okay, what's the fix, right? Okay, so I've got limited mobility, or I've got limited motion, or I've got compromised mobility in a certain range, right? And policymakers or people that don't really have an experience level like we do with a tactical training side, they're almost inevitably going to go, you need to stretch more. We need yoga. We need Pilates. We need all the things that, you know, low risk that they think are high reward. But the reality is, what brings back muscular balance, and you just highlighted it right there talking about the lunges, you know, or whether it's a deficit lunge or if it's a bilateral offloading, you know, with offline midline core stuff, you know, any kind of deficit dead or anything. Mass moves mass, but mass also enhances mobility. And people forget that. They're like, oh, I'm going to stretch myself into mobility. It's like, no, you're going to stretch yourself into stretching for a certain period of time to where you're a little bit more limber, but you're not actually fixing the issue. You're not fixing the muscular imbalance. Your hips still suck. Your shoulders are all rolled forward. No amount of fucking yoga or Pilates is going to fix that without putting some goddamn mass into your body.
Well, you know, there's different types of range of motion. I tell people there's total range of motion, there's passive range mobility, and there's functional range of motion. So you need to innervate the muscle tissue to be able to work through the range of motion. Just because I can take your leg and go a certain height, if I push it that way, that's awesome. But can you bring it up with mass to that zone? Oh, you're only going to go here? So that's your range of motion. Just because I can push you that way doesn't mean anything. I want to see you be able to raise yourself like up and come back down and articulate through there. You know, so like you said, you can, if you start with stretching, it's awesome. So you've allowed the adhesion, the fascia, that you'd be able to stretch that far. So now we can work on building strength to go through there. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. Because if you get caught in that position, you're still getting fucking hurt.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't get hurt accelerating. We get hurt when we decelerate. And it's usually when we're decelerating, not expecting it. As in, I'm running straight forward and I have to plant and cut. There goes my ACL, right? Because my quads were way too dominant. I have no hamstrings. I got no ass. I have no way to put the brakes on quicker. And ironically, you know, and I like that you guys use the force plate with your protocols, because what people forget, you know, speed and agility and quickness and all the kind of high speed stuff, you know, even on the tactical athlete side with two gun, right? Okay, I want to move and I get to move to shoot. Okay. Quickness isn't necessarily something that is, it's as much fast twitch muscles as it's, you see the guys that are the quickest at changing directions. They're usually the ones with the biggest breaks, as in the biggest ass, the biggest hamstrings, the biggest calves. Yes, they've got big quads to go with it. They got a big back. Their posterior looks like a gorilla for a reason. And that's why they're so quick. It's not because they just got, oh, I got more fast twitch fibers. All that bullshit is, it's complete bullshit.
Yeah.
They are perfectly in balance, if anything, leaning towards the posterior side, because if your brakes are twice the size of your accelerators, you're gonna be able to change direction really quickly and a much lower risk of injury when you do so.
Look at you know, football linemen, football linebackers, like they've got some big broad, you know, backs and big broad, you know, quads and everything, because they have to be able to do those cut. And it's just a quick funny note that I just, it just reminds me about, you know, you guys talking about stretching, and there was that Woody Harrelson in Zombieland where he says, does a lion limber up before it takes down a gazelle? You know, so that's kind of, you know, some guys at work, like they'll show up and they're stretching and, you know, getting ready for the day, whatever. It's all in good. And so I'll just throw that out there, you know, I'll just walk by them and just give them the good.
Well, I'd also tell you that actually they do, because if you watch a lion, first of all, adult male lions don't hunt for shit. It's the female lions. Number two, they're usually been tracking something for miles. So they've been fucking running and jogging for a mile to warm up before they explode. So yes, they do warm up.
Yeah, no, it was just a little silly thing. I know, but
I've always heard that, and my response to that is that, you know, that's the myopic thing. You're comparing something to your movement when you don't realize, animal does too. Because I've seen, we have dogs and cats. They tear their muscles and carry ACLs. They get hurt too. So,
Yeah, actually, it's so my wife's cat, Brutus. He is a hunter, and I love watching him hunt. Actually, in the backyard, because he will literally, you'll see him like as if it's a he's a, you're watching a lion in the Serengeti, just the way he tracks and moves, and as soon as he pounces, he goes, and it's actually pretty amazing to see how he does it. But
so Corey, you're. And you and I know we could take this into 10 hours of just training talk with everybody. You know, one key component, and this is a big thing. I think it translates across from the military side, the contractors, the law enforcement side, fire, all the greatest training and programming in the world doesn't mean shit without recovery. And you're building in a recovery program, and you kind of touched on that too, but I know you're also working through the nutritional side of that. Can you talk us through what that recovery and rehab looks like over there that maybe might seem like a foreign concept to everybody, you know, as far as complications, but it's actually pretty simple.
Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to give these guys opportunities to, you know, teach them how to learn about their bodies and what the need for recovery. So, our first phase is we're getting a cold plunge in. We're getting, to work on the cold plunge, cold immersion for nervous system, to reduce inflammation, just do a myriad of things to help clear the mind. That's going to help with mental well-being. We got Normatec sleep compression components coming in, so we can help get all the deoxygenated blood and squeeze those, get the compression on the limbs, so that we can start facilitating good recovery. Obviously people ice and things like that, but we're bringing the game ready sleeves for ankles, knees, shoulders, and hips and lower back. So we can teach these guys about getting some compression and ice, and teaching them there's better ways than just, you know, either not icing or just icing for a second. And it also gives me a audience too, where I can sit there and go, as they're sitting there, I can educate them further on proper stretching, when they can use these modalities. I'm going to be doing body tempering, so teach them about tissue quality and realizing there's areas on the body that realize they're hurt. Learning about scraping. I got a heated scraper. They let me buy a scraper that actually gets heated like with warmth. So
that sounds horrendously awesome.
my flaming sword of justice.
I like it.
Massage guns there too. So I'm just trying to show them that they can, you know, I'm the whole professional athlete messaging is constant. Like, guys, you guys are making some, you know, our medics make $240,000 a year, you know, so
we're in the wrong business, Simon.
No, we are. we've been saying that for a while anyways.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, and they only work 9 months a year. So, but the thing is, these guys need to learn the responsibility. You know, just like some professional athletes making millions of dollars don't quite get it. You see some of these young kids just piss away their talent because they don't take care of themselves. We've still got people here that, you know, their families are depending upon them and everything. And they still don't realize that one little injury can derail that whole thing. And I am here to help prevent, you know, mitigate those issues. I hate to use the term prevention because I'm not going to prevent injuries. I'm just mitigate the chance of an increase happening. So,
well, that's one of those things too. And you know, Iman and I talked about this, my background, nobody ever really tells you that if you have to rely on your body for your job, that might not work out for you. It statistically doesn't. And at some point in time, everybody is a former athlete. You know, you don't think about it when you're in it. Right. But then it's okay. Now, how do I shift to the next level or the next thing? And do I still have enough body left to be able to do that? And I don't think it's an accident, you know, and again, Corey, you know, these numbers too, the competition out there, whether it's in the work field, you know, where you're in, or even like in the fun stuff like CrossFit and tactical games and those events, the I'm using air quotes for those listening, the older guys are beating the younger guys more often than not just because of, you know, age and treachery, but they've just got the experience with how to take care of themselves. And as these events get more difficult, the guys who've been around the block more than the younger guys, they seem to be able to wear a little bit better because they know how to pace themselves and play for the long game, as opposed to, hey, I just won the first event and crushed everybody, but now I'm fucked for the next 5 days. And
well, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the scene in Heartbreak Ridge, the guys take off towards the tank and Gunny keeps running by, you know, gotta so, have that. Gotta, you, Keep your eye on the long haul prize.
That's interesting, Jake. He says, "Oh, every year my SWAT team, we do a run up a mountain. It's called Blue. It's a hill in reality, not really a mountain, but it's called the Blue Hills. So we run up this mountain, and it's about a mile. You know, run straight up the steepest side where we get to the top. You know, to the summit, and we do a whole thing up there. But you see us older guys, you know, the SWAT operators in their, you know, 40s and 50s." We're leaving the young guys behind in the dust all the time. And we yell at them, obviously, because they're young. And we're like, what the fuck? You guys should be up front. But there's a reason why, you know, like you said, Jake, you know, with we know how to take care of ourselves. We know how to pace ourselves. We've just learned, you know, how to do all that. And our training is more on not just strength and condition development, but also rehab. Some of the injuries, because you've got guys who are battle hardened, war torn, whatever, but it, you know, it made us who we are. So it's interesting the way you said that, Jake, about just us older guys, just knowing how to pace ourselves.
Well, and part of the time too, we won't teach them all the tricks and shit. Cause we got to keep some kind of edge and advantage. So
yeah, like, they're not going to learn what I do. Are you kidding me?
Why didn't I learn the 5-finger death punch? Like, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Exactly.
So Corey, you know, on the, and obviously we want to be respectful of your time. One last thing I want to touch on.
I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, perfect. Awesome. I want to make sure we touch on this though, is because you're a big nutrition component person like I am. And that, you know, one of the hardest things to get people to understand is that especially with, you know, everybody that's over there, you're kind of locked in, you've got what you got. It's pretty easy, but you know, for on our end, the challenges with law enforcement, you're on patrol. You know, depending on the department you're in, you're kind of eating out of a box every night, right? You're bringing your cooler or you're doing drive-through, you fast food. And it's like people start getting this like major emotional attachment to food. And you and I have always kind of been in the same boat of, you know, food is fuel. It's nothing fancy. There's nothing particular about it. It's just fuel for recovery. What are you doing on that end of the planet for your crew on that front with the nutrition side, with what's not just what's available to you, but also re-education wise?
Well, you know, it's super hard because we have a DFAC here and the food is what it is. And we do have, they have very little weight. They really can't cook in the rooms, and they can microwave some stuff. They can grill out at night, so they can go to the PX. There's a PX here. So you can buy some meat and things like that. But, you know, if you want to, you can eat pretty healthy in a DFAC. The problem is then it really becomes a really basic diet. Like you can have eggs and oatmeal in the morning, and you can have, they have a cold lunch, but they want rice and soup. So you can get white rice, and they have cube chicken in the salad bar. So you can have chicken and rice. And at night you can have they have a lean protein of some sort and a lean carb. But it definitely makes it harder for them because there's nothing else to do. There's very little variety. It's kind of stuck on what they want to do. So I try to teach them that. The biggest issue I'm dealing with is that there's a pretty well-stocked dessert bar here. You know, cakes and cheesecakes and pies.
Oh, yeah. Gotta be careful.
they constantly make fresh cookies. You know, that's something. And so yeah, one of the chefs is a confectionery guy. So like all the, that's the one thing I'm fighting with. I'm like, hey guys, you know, you guys eat right. And then all of a sudden you eat like two giant cookies every single meal. And so we're just, you know, trying to do that. One of my friends who also is in tactical field asked me, are you working on the caffeine? I was like, I am not going to even bother with the caffeine or the tobacco. Because
you will lose it and chew.
You will lose it. Like I was so funny is one of the guys, one of the training instructors, a Marine, he goes, well, you're a health guy. You don't like energy drinks. And I looked at him and goes, you must be fucking crazy. You're mistaking me for some fitness influencer because half of my blood is caffeine. So,
I love it.
That's fantastic. So. Yeah. I can only imagine the difficulty for, you know, it drives my wife crazy. Cause you know, she'll come and we need groceries. I'm like, no, we don't. We get everything we need. I got eggs. I got meat. And I got, you know, it's like, I don't really enjoy eating. Cause it's for anybody that's been a hard gainer, you know, when you're trying to gain what you're eating 8 times a day plus, and it's like food just becomes an annoyance, and then you get this negative association with it to where I don't want to eat, so I just eat the same thing every day. I don't have to think about it, right? And it's I'm sure for some people they're thriving in that environment because it's like, oh look, I can get the exact same thing every day, the exact same time, and I don't have to think about it. But then the normal people that actually want variety,
it's challenging, you know, especially when, like I said, there's and people that it's funny, you know, I'm used to the military from my experience where you had like 15 minutes to eat and you had to get in, you know, get lock those elbows in, sit down, go get and live. These guys take their time. I mean, the going to eat at Chow Hall is a highlight of the day because they can be social, they can talk. It's something that can actually fairly normal. Well, that turns into, once you've gone through your first layer of meal, people are popping up and going to get some extra bread, an extra bagel, an extra roll, some cake, and extra stuff. So it's just challenging. One thing that we're flirting with is we're bringing in a cooler with protein shakes to put in the gym for the guys. Now, there's multiple companies on campus, so we're trying to figure out a way how to secure it for just our guys. You know, trying to give them way, give them an extra source of lean protein.
So let's I'm just thinking just my time overseas. I mean, I was on a little far, but anyways, so kind of like what's the next steps now you're at for Triple Canopy?
Well, so now we're just, you know, once I get my rehab room built up, we'll get that done. And then the goal is to start getting I've got about 50% of the task order in front of me where I've seen them and put eyeballs on, and the goal is to get the rest of them done. And then as do people rotate in each time, because, you know, not everyone's here. It's just certain people on rotation and what's going on. So it's going to be 6 to 8 months before I start seeing like the normal movement that I want to get done. The goal for me, like I said, I want to have people underneath me, and I'm, you know, trying to figure out the type of person I'd want in here. I think I told Jake the listing for this job, for my position, was one of the most ridiculous listings I've ever seen in my life. It shows that you had a medical officer and a vice president that they nearly wanted a qualified person, but they just started throwing like qualifications against the wall. And let's just say you had been an easier time getting hired at University of Michigan head football strength coach than you would be getting hired here.
Oh, wow.
As far as let's go through them. Minimum 10 years college pro or tactical strength and conditioning experience, master's degree, CSCS, FMS 1 and 2. They also want an SFMA, which I don't have. Can't have it because I'm not a chiropractor or physical therapist. Special operations personal experience. Your own personal military experience, experience with tactical strength and conditioning, experience with soft tissue release. It was just like all of these things. And I showed my buddy who's actually a SEAL, former SEAL, and he's a strength coach, has a degree, and then a master's. And I go, and he was like, I don't know very many people who can fit that mold. It just happened to.
That's like five people.
Yeah. And it was like, it just happened to see it. And I go, well, I don't have SFMA. I had one thing that didn't, only one thing on there I didn't have. And then that was the SFMA. And I emailed him and he's like, well, you know, you got everything. You sure you can't get this SFMA? And I said, I just talked to functional medicine. Unless you want me to pay to go to med school to be a physical therapist, you know, and the thing is, to be honest with you, the SFMA, the breakouts, I wouldn't have time to do it here anyways.
Well, that's nuts. I'm super pumped for it because, I mean, obviously we go back and knowing that this is, you know, out there just even as a career field, and for anybody listening, you know, if they're kind of looking around at, you know, maybe they're active right now and they're looking to do the next phase of their career because they're kind of getting to that, you know, I've got a few years in, maybe a couple different re-enlistments and you know, definitely look into, I mean, especially Triple Canopy. I mean, as a company goes, they're rock stars. I mean, you guys, I know a few people that work for the company, and every single person is a solid, solid dude that I know that works for them. I mean, it's a pretty awesome gig, and I'm excited for you because of all the people I know that deserve it, you're right there. I mean, you fucking slogged it out, man. I mean, you put the time in and trying to, you know, kind of yelling on a soapbox to anybody that'll listen about this shit. And nobody pays attention to us because we're not social media influencers. We don't give a fuck about social media. We're just trying to help the people on the ground. And that's a really hard thing to do with all that white noise out there in the netherland of Instagram and social media with, you know, all these hard body wannabes that think they know shit and they don't know shit about fuck.
Right. I'm excited for it. It's a little overwhelming. You know, I have my family back there in Vancouver, and miss them dearly, but this is a nice opportunity too. People don't realize I get to come home every 90 days for a whole month. So I actually get 3 months vacation a year. So I don't know how many jobs making, a nice six-figure income, and some people come home and they pay for that travel too. So
yeah, No, that's super awesome. So, hey, man, we want to be respectful of time and everything. And of course, you got a little bit of time. You can call the family. One last question we ask everybody, because we got, people going into work, they're listening to this on their way in going on shift, maybe they're going on patrol or they're, or even in basic or whatever. We try to give everybody like just one thing from our guests that they can take and do today. One thing that they can implement, and for whether it's training or nutrition or mindset or whatever, but what's one thing that you'd want to have anybody listening today that they can take with them to go make themselves just 1% better for the next shift or the next time they're out, past the wire or wherever they might be?
I would say, as far as going when you're, for my first responders, Leos and tactical athletes, go do a stretch you've never done before. Go understand and feel what that feels like, and then see how it gives you feedback to your daily life and to your lifts. We talk a lot about flexibility this last hour, but guys, I'm big, Jake knows this too. I'm a big lifter, but big about moving massive amounts of load, but I want you guys to move correctly when you do it too. So just find something you're not comfortable doing and just jump into it. So.
Love it. That's awesome. That's huge. I really appreciate that, Corey. And obviously everybody listening, that's going to be a big value add for their night, and they can go figure out what they're doing. Cannot thank you enough for coming into us. I mean, all the way from Baghdad, massive time zone shift. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all of our supporters and sponsors, AAA Police Supply, the law enforcement listeners. That's that one-stop shop for duty gear. Go to AAAPoliceSupply.com. Hybrid10 is your code for 10% off every order. Also want to thank our friends at the Havoc Journal and the partners that we have in the Profiles and Havoc podcast. Big, big thanks to them, as well as Second Mission Foundation, educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community. Head over to secondmissionfoundation.org for more information from them, along with our friends at 22 Mohawks, combating veteran suicide, providing assistance to veterans needing help. Go to 22mohawks.com to learn more, as well as our good buddy Kyle Lamb at Viking Tactics, the best tactical gear anywhere, battle belts to slings, everything in between. Head to vikingtactics.com for the highest quality battle-proven tactical gear on the planet. And of course, our good friends at the Overwatch Project. Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of actions and work with us to help prevent suicide and with the use of firearms by just fucking asking the question, what's your plan? Can we make one together? And will you be my buddy and do the same for me? I'm in, man. Corey crushed it. We're killing it this season. I'm super pumped, and this has been so fun.
Oh, absolutely, man. It was very informative. I hope everyone got something out of this. Awesome episode. So, Corey, if you want to just hang out for a minute, bro, and we'll talk to you offline for a minute.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, everybody else listening, and make sure to stay safe.
Stay sapient.